Welcome to the MTOM Show Podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. My name is Paul Yeager. Dramatic pause much? No. We're not pausing when it comes to paying at the pump, or are we? We're going to talk about oil exploration, relationship to gas prices, and also the relationship to natural gas. We're going to talk with Jay Young. He's the King Operating President and CEO of a family business that's five generations. We're going to dip into an 80s TV show theme to get started. So if you need to Google 80s TV show about oil in the state of Texas, you're not going to have to look much further than the word Dallas. We'll talk about that and a little bit of the parallels there. Not necessarily who shot JR, but we're going to talk about family drama when it comes to oil. And also, what's going on in exploration? We're going to discuss this gap from when oil was negative in April of 2020 to over $100 a barrel in the West Texas Intermediate contract in the month of July. What's changed during those two times? What is going on? And where Jay sees the price of oil headed. That is the discussion in today's MTOM Show Podcast, which comes your way each and every Tuesday. Subscribe. You can listen to us via YouTube or watch us via YouTube. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen on YouTube as well, but those are just a couple of the places where this podcast is. We thank you who've left comments. If you have one for me, paul.yeager@iowapbs.org. So now, let's get to Jay. Jay, you're dressed like it's Texas weather or that you're stuck in the Midwest. Is it hot? Tell me it's that great dry Texas heat today. What is it, like 190?
Oh, my gosh. It's so hot in my office for some reason. The air's not working. So I was going to wear a jacket on your show just because, hey, you know what? I want to be respectful. I was going to change, but, man, I can't.
That's all right.
I mean, I'm in a knit shirt, and I'm hot. I'm sitting here sweating.
We always send people over for a little touch-up on the forehead if we need to. So if you just open up that door to your right, someone will come through and powder your forehead now and your cheeks.
That's awesome.
So you're in Texas. How'd you get there? Are you native?
Yeah, I'm a native. My great-grandfather was in the oil and gas business. He had 12 kids, and out of 12 kids, if you're a man, you're in the oil business. If you're a woman, you're married to somebody in the oil business, so it's got like a fourth generation thing. You know, nobody owned a company or went out on their own. That in my direct family, my uncles did or my great uncles did. Funny, we were looking at some prospects the other day and I looked and there's a company that drilled a well back 50 years ago. And I go, wait a minute, that's Turner well. And I go, hey, that's my great uncle that drilled that well, you know, and that's pretty cool. But anyway, so I've been in this business all my life, and what we do is we just have a fund, and people invest in the fund. We go out and drill wells. They get monthly income, tax benefits, while we scale the investments to sell them in the future. And I wrote a book called The Upside of Oil and Gas Investing, and the reason why is because I want people to know, hey, you know what? There's a lot of different ways on how you can invest in oil and gas, and 90% of them are bad. From the start, you know, I mean, people, and I was the same way until I found the value add model that we have today. We have the value add just like apartments or commercial buildings or houses. People flip these houses. We do the same thing with our assets and oil and gas. So I'm kind of like the expert in oil and gas, and we bought wells all over the place, and we love to drill wells. So we're looking for two to three year hold and clients get monthly income, but we also look to flip it. Right. More money in the future. So
I'm going to do a stereotype. I'm going to do a stereotype here, Jay. I didn't hear you mention that you had an Uncle JR or Sue Ellen or the Ewing family. How accurate was that TV show to the, I mean, take out all the drama business. Is that one of those where you look around and say, seriously, did you have to?
No, there is. I mean, like the Hunt family here in Texas, it's amazing how much money that family has. And just generations. And, you know, he had like three wives or something and two at the same time that didn't, and I don't know if he was married to, anyway, it was H.L. Hunt was an incredible man, not only, you know, from the standpoint of having wives and kids, but there's so many different still, I mean, like Ray Hunt's worth $4 or $5 billion and Herbert's worth a bunch of money. I mean, the guy that started soccer, the guy that started the Super Bowl. I mean, there's some of the that's who the Dallas is named after, is or is portrayed after, is the Hunt family. But I mean, there's just some families that just have so much money, you know, that it's just it's incredible the amount of money that somebody can make. So I'm around some of them. I don't have that kind of money, but hey, it's always good to hang around people. You're some of the six people you hang around. I just keep hanging around those guys. Maybe something will happen one of these days.
Well, there's a reason I bring up the Ewings, the fictional TV show, is that there's a generation. You're a generation that's involved in it. This is an industry like agriculture that goes over generations. What is it that inspired you, Jay, to get into this business?
Yeah, well, man, I grew up, and I was tall enough to drive a pickup, and I'm like 6'4", 240, whatever, but so I'm kind of a tall guy. And then when I was like 11, 12 years old, my grandfather used to take me to the oil field, and he let me drive his truck, you know, the old 3-speed on the column, you know, that old 3. So I'd drive the 3-speed. I'd go with him in the oil field, and he let me drive, and he'd take a nap, and I'd go squirrel hunting or whatever during the time he was taking a nap. I'd work on the oil field, and man, it just became so familiar to me. So when I got out of college, you know, in the mid 80s, man, it was the oil was not great at that time, because we had a flop in the oil business. So I got a business degree. And so I went to the stock business, and then I started coming back to the oil business and went to work for a company for 5 years that sold deals. But they sold deals the wrong way, where clients don't have a chance to make money. And so I revolutionized our model and did something different. But I just love the business. I mean, I just love drilling for wells. I mean, we're putting together right now, we may have 4 rigs running by the end of this year, drilling for oil and gas. And our clients could literally have millions and millions of dollars in revenue coming to them just because we found some great prospects. That's what I'm doing right now, is I'm looking through and I'm looking at some prospects for Fund 2 that we're doing. But Fund 1, we already have all these prospects, and we're going to drill those. And it's so much fun. I mean, it really is. I mean, if you came up here, you're welcome to come down. Let's come on down and take a look, and we'll go to the well site. We always have something going on, obviously, and you can always come down, and we'll go to the well site, and you'll see how much fun it is. There's so much to it.
Well,
you know, it's not easy.
The closest I've been to, Jay, is the win in the late 2010, 2011 area in North Dakota, when you started doing fracking up there in the Bakken Range.
Right.
What's the prospect of fracking these days, or is it more of the traditional oil wells that you're used to?
Yeah, well, it's the fracking going on right now. I mean, that's the Permian Basin. I mean, they found a way to frack wells in the Permian Basin to make sense, you know, because it is a blanket depositional type sand, and you can drill it horizontally and you know, achieve a multiple on your returns of drilling. For it may cost you $10 million to drill a well, compared to $2-3 million it take you to drill a vertical well. It may cost you more money, but you got 10,000 feet, you know, exposing that well bore that you're drilling horizontally, and then you're fracking it, and the oil's coming out of the ground. I mean, it's, you know, 10 years ago, the Permian Basin here in Midland, Odessa, and into New Mexico was producing about 1 million barrels of oil a day, and today it's producing 5 million. And it continues to go up because of the new technology and the new techniques. Thank goodness. I mean, we don't produce enough oil right now in the United States for our appetite, or our, what do they say? It's our addiction to oil. So we don't drill enough and produce enough right now for our addiction. And just imagine if we didn't have that extra $4 to $5 million out of the Permian Basin, that would be a lot more that we would need to go over and beg from Saudi Arabia or Argentina or some of the other countries that hold us hostage and would take advantage of us. So thank goodness we are producing more oil.
Are we exporting oil in this country?
Yeah, we've never hit our appetite's 20 million a day. We got to 14 million a day. So we were still negative 6 million, but we were exporting 1 million to 2 million barrels a day. Why? Because our refineries, we don't have the refineries necessary in the United States to refine 20 million barrels a day. Even if we could drill 20 million barrels a day, we're still not there to be able to refine it. So, and there's always a different kind of oil, like the oil we were getting out of Russia at one time. That's a different type of oil that's used to manufacture different products. So there's just all these different types of oil. So we are not exporting right now. We may be exporting a little bit. I mean, I'm not going to say we're not at all, but we may be exporting a little bit. But when we were up there with Drill Baby Drill with Trump, we're paying $2 at the gas pump, and we're also exporting about 2 million barrels a day. And that was going to go up. That was going to continue to go up because we had talked about, hey, we're going to be at, 17, 18, 19 million barrels a day. Like I said, our refineries couldn't handle it, but we were going to export a lot more oil. And the pandemic happened and just turned everybody upside down.
Well, early on in the pandemic, we went to negative oil. What was your thoughts that week?
Yeah, man, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I was on a podcast. I was on a podcast. I went home for lunch, ate a sandwich, and I saw that oil prices were a penny, 0.01. I'm like, so weird. And I got back and I had an interview with my preacher from our church, and I was interviewing him on the podcast, and I almost said a dirty word because I looked at the TV screen and it was minus 20. And I was just like shocked. I mean, I was like, I've never seen a negative sign, in front of the dollar sign for oil minus 20. I was like really kind of crazy. But I know that it costs money to get oil out of the ground. I mean, there's no question it costs you a certain amount of dollars to buy the leases, to drill and complete the wells, to do all that necessary. And I knew it was just an imbalance because we were oversupplied at that moment. We were oversupplied with oil, and our demand had just, talk about demand destruction, man, we were zero demand, and our supplies were way up there. So we had to balance it back out, and all of a sudden, we don't go back to drilling at all, and our rig count loses 75% of our rig count. We're not drilling for oil in the United States, and all of a sudden, it sucked up all that extra excess supply we had, and demand came up, and demand still stayed strong and continuing on, and that's why oil prices are pretty strong today. I mean, not today; they're coming down last couple of days, but I can see it going back up at the this summer and also going into the end of the year. I still feel like it's going to stay above $80 a barrel, if not more than that.
80 is kind of your number that we don't go below that.
Yeah, that's my number.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said a couple of things there. Appetite for oil has driven a lot of the demand side of this ledger. In the last 2.5 years since we hit that negative spot, I think it was in April of 20, did rigs go offline to not keep up with demand? I mean, I know we were like, we have nowhere to put this oil. We have more. What happened? What is that? Yeah. What was that?
You mean what happened during that time?
What happened from April to 20? What happened from April of 20 negative oil to over $110 a barrel for WTI? Yeah. What happened that time?
That's a good question. So, Paul, what I think happened was we just had there was a lot of contracts because, on the commodity exchange, we hedge our oil. We've got 10,000 barrels of oil a day, and I'm sorry, 10,000 barrels a month hedged at $80 a barrel. Mm-hmm. So anything goes below that, we get paid below 80. We lose everything above that. But, hey, we're just protecting our downside. And we produce 30,000 barrels a month. So it's a different deal. So, but with what happened then was there were so many different people. And what they were doing is they were saying, oh, okay, hey, you know what? If you don't pay us for this contract, we're gonna deliver oil tankers full of oil to your footsteps or your front door. So you need to do this, and so everybody was just freaking out. We oversupplied, but then all of a sudden we started you know, coming back, and then our demand. If you look at the demand for oil, you know, it's starting to come up, and it came up modestly in the very beginning, but then with COVID, you know, COVID came back, and all of a sudden with COVID, we started, you know, coming back to work, and then jet airplanes, and then, you know, all the different things. I mean, but just think about it for a second. I mean, there's only like 60%. Well, I'm sorry, 60% of the barrel oil is not used for planes, trains, and automobiles, right? So we have 40% of our oil is used for gasoline or whatever. So even if we had every electric car off the deal, our demand for oil is still, you know, 60% of a barrel of oil. So we still need oil. So I think what happened was, you know, people just thought, okay, well, our demand's not there. And then all of a sudden, you know, what happened is when Biden got into as president, I don't know if you're a Biden supporter or, you know, and your listeners, but you know what, if you look at my LinkedIn, I put a deal out, and it was about about Biden when he got in office. It was like $2 a gallon. And then it talked about, okay, Keystone Pipeline, we're going to shut it down. All the different pipelines. There's all different types of midstream assets that he shut down. Permits, Alaska, all these different things. And he talked about, okay, well, let's look at what Biden did, you know, at $2 gas, and he shut this down. No. I mean, it's like all these different no's. There's nothing that's encouraging all of the people like us in the United States to go drill for oil and gas. I mean, so the independent like me is drilling for oil and gas, but the public companies like Exxon makes $6 billion first quarter. Well, they spend $10 billion buying back their stock, where normally if they make $6 billion, they'd put that right back in the ground, especially with these economics. Because at $100 a barrel, $120 a barrel, man, the economics look really, really good. So this is something that we as a company and we as a country have seen. And I've never seen it like this before. I've seen a lot of ups and downs.
Dramatic shutdown of all of those things, those six things that you just listed.
All the negativity and there's no encouragement. There's no, hey, let's go drill. Let's go, you know, public companies, you know, there's ESG, these social governance, environmental social governance, where they're out there talking, you know, the public companies. Exxon has three people on their board that are anti-drilling. We don't want any oil and gas. I mean, look at John Kerry. I mean, even that bozo, I mean, I call him a bozo, but he's like, you know what? Well, we'll be fine in 5 or 10 years. You know, I mean, not everybody in the world can afford to ride around in a private jet and be in a limo. And I don't even know what the price of gasoline is or care what it is. You know, and that's what he's doing is he's going around, oh, yeah, we'll be fine in 5 or 10 years when our demand goes down. You know, and yes, everybody in the oil and gas business understands it's going to go down. And we're going to have electric cars. But you know what? Until then, we need to be drilling for oil and gas sooner than later to bring these prices down, in which we have been drilling, and that's what you're seeing right now with the markets. You know, coming down a little bit, I can see it coming down, and I'm glad it is. You know, right now it's hard to drill for oil and gas because you have all these different people that are drilling, and we can't get rigs, and there's personnel problems, and casing is through the roof if you can find it. So we do have some of these shortages that we're having to go through right now.
All right, so you bring up a couple of things right there. Let's start with casings and the rigs. I'm looking at right behind you on the wall. This is an example, a generalization. Say there's 100 of those, either the pump jack or the tower there of some kind. There's 100 of them. A company had it. Say your company had it. You took 25 of those and mothballed them when oil was as low as they were, because you're like, it's not profitable for me to be running those things. And then as the other 75 broke down or had a part that needed removed, you took from that 25 off some piece, put it on the unit. And now when it's back to being a profitable time to put that rig back out there, you're not able to
put that rig back in service it once was. Is that an accurate depiction of some company's state of affairs? Because they,
yeah, there's some people that when they know the cycle, they've been through it, and they just they go out and spend millions and millions of dollars and put all these pumping units and things in their yard, or just, you know, they go rent someplace and go put all this stuff in, and then when prices do come back around, you know, they're heroes because they can sell it for 2-3 times. It's just like any business, right? You buy low, sell high. And a lot of these people do that. Unfortunately, we didn't do that to some equipment like pipe. I wish I would have, but I did buy some incredible assets that our clients are enjoying right now. You know, I bought some deals that we were that you know, natural gas prices were $2, $2.50. Now they're $6, $7, and it's in some of our funds. But we've continued to drill new wells, and those assets we bought at $2.50, we're getting double. You know, that are almost triple, I guess, right now, because we bought it at lower prices. So we know the business is cyclical. It's just, you know, catching yourself and making sure that you stay alive during these times, because, man, it's like real estate, you know, the stock market and real estate are kind of like this. But, man, the oil and gas business is up and down, up and down, up and down. I look to, you know, at least have enough for our investors and for ourselves. I'm the biggest investor in all our funds, but I go, okay, hey, let's put together this fund and let's go out here and drill these wells and let's sell enough of it to get my money back, my client's money, my money, whatever. You know, just because if you don't have a divestiture, it's gonna hurt once it goes down. You know, once the price goes down, because at that point, you can't find a buyer for anything, you know, so it's hard. So the older I get, I'm 59 and a half, and I'm closer. No, I'm not 60. I was going to say, I've been saying 59 and a half forever. But I'm of the age to where I think, okay, hey man, we've seen a lot of these, and let's keep it between the ditches, right? And let's just, you know, keep doing what we know how to do and we love to do. Because we love this oil business.
All right. Well, this is probably not going to keep you between the ditches, this one of these questions here. Who's had a bigger influence on oil in the United States, Vladimir Putin or Joe Biden?
Who's had a bigger impact? Oh, my goodness, man, that's a good question. Paul, I'm sitting here thinking about that. Oh, man, I mean, well,
and the reason I say that, I'm going to stall for a minute to let you think about that. There's a theory of just the way the world is pretty fluid with a lot of things. We can get stuff from Europe easier here, or Europe fills this. We need to fill a little void here, and then they do. It's like corn; it has to move. Sometimes it's Brazil that feeds it to the Chinese, then it's us. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, you mention all of the things that Biden has done, but is there an argument to be made that maybe what Vladimir Putin did with Ukraine has had a bigger influence on oil?
It is a big influence. But I don't see it being as big as the move. Okay, so let's say if we'd have continued drilling like we did, and Biden allowed these 200 rigs or 400 rigs to come in sooner, you know, I think we would be closer. I do think that the Russian impact is $10, $20 max, $20 a barrel max with this. And I know that it's causing a big ruckus right now in the whole entire economies of scale because of 100 million barrels a day that's needed across the world. So I do know that's a little different, but really when you think about it, and that's a great question. I haven't been asked that question, and I am going to use that, but I'm going to use that question because that is really good. Because I mean, think about it for a second, going, okay, hey, well, wait a minute. There's two different things that are going on here. And if I don't know what's, you know, Biden does, Putin has. So, but anyway, good question, Paul. I like that.
All right. You can use that one. Just say my friends in Iowa say. Okay. You've said $80. We're falling right now as we tape this. It's pulling. I saw a chart earlier today. You know, natural gas was maybe the first thing to lose a lot of steam. Then the wheat market. And now it's oil. And it'll be housing. And it'll be... are any of these... I mean, of course, everything's tied together. But is there one that is tied together more in the movement of oil? when it comes to a commodity or a market?
No, really, right now, I don't. I mean, not even oil and natural gas, because at one time you could say, hey, if oil is at 20, natural gas is at 2. If it goes to 33, I mean, you could do that at one time. It was a 10 to 1. You can't even do that now. You know, it's kind of crazy that you can't do that, but yeah, you really can't. So I'd have to say no. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
I think all commodities, and I do believe that we're in this commodity boom in the United States. It's like the only time we've ever done this, and I believe that all commodities will go up in the future, because of what we're seeing right now. We're seeing, you know, it's like the guy the other day, I was getting ready to be on this TV station, and this lady was there, and she goes, okay, well, watch this for a second. We'll get you right after this. And then they were showing this guy at the pump, and he goes, man, I'm going to tell you what. He goes, everything's going up in this world except for my paycheck. You know, so that's the truth right now is not our company. I mean, we're helping that situation out. But I'll tell you what, you know, everything's going up, and we're seeing everything go up, and we need for prices to obviously come down for consumers, because we don't need to continue, you know, paying that much for gasoline.
Gasoline, yeah, it went down, I think, the week before the 4th of July by a penny, and I think we'll probably see a bigger move down this week. And gasoline is usually we've hit peak demand on the 4th, but, you know, we still are all anxious to drive. I still have trips to take before the year is done. So, and that's the thing with oil and gas. Gasoline aren't necessarily tied straight together. If one thinks that the oil drops, gasoline should drop, but they're not super tied together. Natural gas is another thing that you were just talking about. So am I incorrect on that?
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's closer to oil and gasoline. But it won't be just an immediate, you know, if you look at the TV, I've had this asked, they're like, well, I mean, look at that. Oil's down $3 today. Well, I'm still paying $4.35. I go, yeah, no. Hey, it'll get there. It just takes a little bit of time for it to, you know, go from the commodity market to the oil tanks to the, you know, I mean, it'll, they already bought that oil that they're selling you a long time ago, and they drilled it a lot longer than that before. So it takes time, but it is a good leading indicator. If oil prices do come down and continue to come down, they're $98 right now. But if they do continue to come down, then you will see gasoline prices come down.
All right, Jay, and we're running right up against it here. I have one last question. Have we seen peak oil and for production in the United States?
Peak oil for production? I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think we can continue to drill more. And, you know, there's a lot of places right now that you can continue to drill. And I believe that we will see an increase in production.
Fantastic. Jay, I appreciate the time and the insight. Man, we could keep going. If I wouldn't spend so much time asking about Bobby Ewing and J.R. Ewing, we would have probably gotten more covered. All right, Jay Young, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Anytime, give me a call. I'd love to be on again.
Send me an email, please, markettomarket@iowapbs.org for any feedback you have about the episodes or guests that you'd like to see. Thank you to Russ and Jeff for submitting those in recent weeks, and we're working on some of those topics. Thank you so very much. We'll see you next time.